Kagura Miki. This is one of the pillow books that were written by Japanese women in the Heian era. The drizzle repeating itself, the mountains murmur, white as the mist and sky. Today, no music in the mother chamber, behind the curtains and both wooden blinds. Today, the weather has darkened and left sleeves down. Despite the charcoal burner, the resplendent fabrics, something nostalgia itself can no longer contain. And behind the fiery flushed cheeks, the sweat-drenched hair, the ink-stained fingers, perhaps the sadness is true. Page of writing. Removing copulatives makes matters mysterious. Relieving images of causes, effects, deburred for a smoother ride. Onze bis rue Chercheur. Now, this is an address at which both Simone de Beauvoir and Anaïs Nin lived. In fact, they lived in the very same flat, but several decades apart. About Simone, with her spotted old woman's hands, there was something clumsy as she slowly dispensed her whiskey, at the same time distilling something else, something that intimidated passers-by as she went shopping in the neighborhood. "This is not me," she seemed to say. "So I'm not here." How different Anaïs with the dreamy fingers 50 years earlier, a young thing yet. Convinced all eyes were on her, she walked up the boulevard like a star in the Milky Way, not knowing whether it made her happy or not. Better to lean against an old tree in the cemetery across the street and dream on, a child photographed by a pervert god. Thérèse, that's Thérèse of Lisieux. Loving in joy and health is problematic. Cold, loneliness, repressed pain do not lie so easily. A mood can be made to say anything, so you just shut up. The tears you caught before they fell sometimes turn to God's roaring laugh. The comb, that's a reference to the story, which is probably apocryphal, of Emily Brontë dropping her comb in the fire on the day she died. Where am I now? Is this going to go on for months? Emily opens her eyes wide into the air. Her foot reaches no further than the board floor, her gaze no further than the whitewashed wall. It may be she's touching them in a dream. Thick, greasy, brittle mass of hair, sour over abundant life, sweat in her eyes. Life no longer wants her to lift her comb. Fiery liquid air coming to my rescue. I'm burning, and what I get is more of the same. Life has me by the throat with its burn-borne stink. All that purifies her is the fire to which her comb has yielded itself. The turf is cut open with a shovel and sweats under the white sun. And in the mirror, seated and blurred, there I go again, skinny Emily with the smoky eyes. The visitor and his guide. He sat and scratched the ash with a finger he hoped was careless. The lumpy earth smelt of fire and was covered with a fine mesh of roots to which particles stuck, and here and there of old bone. He feigned detachment and kept a close watch on the other guy. He picked a few toadstools, turned them over in his palm and threw them away. "Are they edible?" asked the other guy. "Not these," he replied darkly. And the other guy couldn't tell whether he was referring to the species or the soil in which they had grown. Thank you. Sorry. There's another one. Tibet. Ultimate wisdom is unintelligible as a matter of course, practiced by blue gods and green poets, a sword in one hand and an eye in the other, and full of exotic concepts in foreign languages, translated into clumsy verse by scholars, which you don't understand, in any case, because wisdom's only for other people. Tibet 2. They add colours to the landscape by tying flags to it, tattered yet beautiful, and they wonder why the Minotaur is sad. The monster had a sack of kindness on his shoulder. He didn't know where to lay it down. His heart was filled with envy, and no one he could envy in the world. Thank you. And this really is it.